How many people here are our older siblings? Man, I got a problem with some of you guys. You know, the thing is with older siblings, they always seem to have a bit of the advantage. You know, you're growing up, it's like if they're a bit, I don't know if it's just because they're older, smarter, stronger, but they seem to be able to get their way, you know? And especially when you're little, you just take things. But there's, you know, if you're a younger sibling, there's something you learn early on. There's a way to kind of, you know, yeah, there's a way to kind of even it a little bit, you know? If you're older and younger, you fell. I was in the middle as well. But the younger sibling kind of figures out early on if they have a, you know, if they can call on the parents, that can be the great equalizer and they'll find justice. You know, so the older sibling learns that, you know, the younger one can cry for the one who's really in charge and receive his justice. And you'd like to think the older sibling is nice because it's the right thing to do. Sometimes it's right because they're afraid and they do the right thing. It's like, what does this have to do with anything? That's actually somewhat of the picture that the Bible kind of presents on God's view of the poor and the ones who are needy. And so they're the one who are without the power, but the one who's watching, that God has his eye on them, they can call out to him and he hears and sees what's going on. You know, it's you know, the Walk for Hunger was this last week, and you know, you're surrounded, and actually we're in the midst of getting towards Shavuot, which also you know, Pentecost, which has a big theme about caring for the poor. You know, we live in a culture where we're just kind of overwhelmed by the need. You know, we can see things. I mean, cultures before didn't have TV, didn't have all these newspapers. I mean, didn't have all the information we have now. You see poverty, you see disease, you see horror all over the place. And you think as a believer in Jesus, how am I supposed to think about that? You know, what am I supposed to do? What's my responsibility? And maybe sometimes we don't think about that because it's more comfortable not to, because it's too overwhelming to think about it. So I thought we'd do a little study looking into the Torah specifically. You know, what can we understand from the Torah and its teachings? I mean, if that's sort of like the setup of the sort of perfect society of God's in a way, of Israel, what can we learn about how to think about the poor and the needy? And so that's what we're going to take a look at, some stuff in the Torah about that. I want to give a little mini tutorial on using the laws of the Torah. All right, it may seem like it's tough, but it's, and a lot of people disagree with me on this, but here's what I think. There's two great errors you make in using the Torah. There's two things you can't do that people do. Number one is you can't take the laws, and this is where a lot of people are going to disagree with me, you can't take the laws and just slide them right over. You know, they go, no eat shellfish. You know, stone an adulterer. You know, you don't slide. I don't think any of them slide over. Slide to all. You can't take the Torah and just go, boom, this is what you do today. Okay, that's what the law says. Here's what you do today. I'll explain in a second why I don't believe any. You don't do that. But the second thing you don't do is you don't do it because I can't slide some over. You know, that you throw away them all. You go, oh, what does it matter for all? Like I was reading Christianity Day the other day, and there was actually a Christian musician who didn't like some of the laws regarding sexual ethics. She goes, well, we don't do the rest of this stuff anyway, right? You know, so why should I care about those particular laws? She basically was taking this, well, I can't do all those different laws, so therefore they're all irrelevant. Neither is the case. And unfortunately, you have to think. I really apologize for that. The basic idea is that every law in the Torah is eternal and absolute. But what's absolute and eternal about it is the principle of God that went into it. You're saying it's the principles of God which then get placed within a particular context that comes out the law. So the principle is eternal and true. The context, though, is not. The context is that context. You know, for example, a lot of the context, right, was a lot of the context of the Torah. So many of the laws have to do, say, with the temple, you know, which is the dwelling place of God among the people, you know, in this particular place. And so a lot of the laws, actually the internal principles a lot of the laws say, are expressing the eternal principles of the holiness of God, the sinfulness of man, atonement, the way by which a holy God has fellowship with a sinful man, for instance. A lot of them had to do with the nature of a governmental system. I'll give you one law, right? If you touch a high priest could not touch a dead body, or else he'd be defiled and unable to serve in the in the temple. You look at that and go, well, now how does that... Now, if you were people who thought, well, they just pass them right over right here. Just do the... If we're supposed to obey the law as best we can by just sliding it over into our culture. So does that mean our pastors today aren't supposed to touch dead bodies? Or, I mean, you understand there's no context. It's not... you don't slide it over. But does that mean you ignore it? No, what does that law talk about? You know, the high priest, right, is the atoner. He's the one who stands in between the sinful people and the holy God. So it talks about atonement. It talks about the fact that the holiness of God, even by touching a dead body, he could not go there. So it talks about the holiness of God. And it talks about even death, the nature in which, you know, the brokenness of the world and sin and the death that's caused from it. I mean, it's just saying these are some of the principles that are, you know, the eternal principles which still are happening today, which are from that law, but it's not the law itself. I don't know if that makes sense. There's some laws which may look like they cross over, like do not murder. But in my mind, do not murder doesn't even pass over. Do not murder reflects a eternal principle of, you know, God's the creator of life. You cannot take life. You don't murder. Now you take that principle over into our society today, and how does it come when it comes down into our society? What does that law look like? Do not murder. It happens to look identically, but it's not because it's being slid over. Does that make sense? You know, it's because it's the same principle. You know, committed, you know, stone an adulterer. Well, a lot of that had to do because that was a context where they were a government system. The heinousness of adultery, actually, I believe, is an eternal principle which comes over. Now, the heinousness of adultery could apply itself in different ways. We're not a government, so we're not going to stone that. But it doesn't change it. Anyways, that's just some of the... the reason I say that is because we'll look at these particular laws, and what you're trying to grasp from these are what the eternal principles are. Now, I'm not going to go spend the entire time trying to figure out exactly how all those eternal principles come into our society today, because that's a very difficult process. That's what ethics is. You take all these different principles of God and apply them into your situation. How does it apply in? That's a huge context. But we're going to start now by trying to identify some of the big principles. And I think a lot of them are fairly obvious. It's not so hard to grasp. So starting in Deuteronomy 15, which is one of the classic passages dealing with the poor, at the start it says, it says at the end of every, this is just, I'm going to do some just spotting of different laws, but it's kind of interesting for the different kind of, again, the principles of God in dealing with the poor. At the end of every 7 years, you must cancel debts. This is how to be done. Every creditor shall cancel the loan he's made to his fellow Israelite. He shall not require payment from his fellow Israelite or brother because the Lord's time for canceling debts has been proclaimed. Interesting little law, isn't it? Every 7 years, debts were canceled out. People couldn't get themselves into debt in perpetuity. You know, there was always a release of it. Now, some people think it was a release for a year. I don't think so. I think it was a complete, you know, cleaning of the slate. Very interesting, interesting rule. There's actually a lot of laws in relation to this idea of debt, getting into debt. Like another interesting law in relation to debt, it says, this is actually two different laws here. It says when you make a loan of any kind to your neighbor. So by the way, you can see that loans are okay to make. Nothing wrong with that. They said you didn't, usually didn't charge interest to your Israelite, but non-Israelite you could. But again, it wasn't usurious. At that time, by the way, it was like 25% interest was common at that, you know, the ancient world like that, just brutal. And that was not allowed in the Torah. It says when you make a loan of any kind to your neighbor, here's an interesting one. Don't go into his house to get what he's offering as a pledge. By pledge, it's a collateral. You know, offering collateral for your loan. Don't go in his house to get it. Stay outside. Let the man whom you're making the loan bring the pledge out to you. Now, what's that law about? What's the principle there? Yeah, it's degrading. Don't degrade the one in need. You know, don't degrade him when he's in poor. Now, that would have been degrading at that point. Not even going outside, going into his house, grabbing the collateral. And look at this second law in regards to it. If the man is poor, do not go to sleep with his pledge. You know, his collateral in your possession. Because the assumption is return his cloak to him by sunset so he may sleep in it. The cloak being the collateral. Clothing was very expensive. You know, we have so much clothing here, we can't even imagine that clothing could be something of the only thing of value this person has. It's extremely hard to, you know, to get stuff to make it. Remember even at the time of Yeshua, Jesus, you know, was like, let's divide up the garment because, you know, a single piece of cloth was worth a ton of money and very difficult to make. So here this person, all he has is a cloak and that's what he's sleeping in. He says, if that is all he has to offer you as collateral and it's cold at night, you make sure he gets that back. Yeah. I mean, it actually, I can't speak to that so much. The implied responsibility you have to repay your loan, I think, is there, but it gets canceled. There's a time of canceling it.
Is there any,
Can you hold on to that thought? It applies, but we'll get there. And there is an interesting, is a really interesting one, because you would think, maybe I don't want to make that loan in the sixth year. Right. So keep that thought. It deals with that. I'm not going to deal with it right now. I'm going to get to it. So anyway, there was all this stuff about debts. Another law was this idea in, this one's really going to tick off, Mike. The land must not be sold permanently because the land is mine. You're but aliens and tenants. I'm sorry. The law, this was the logic behind the law. This is the Jubilee. Every 50 years, there's a complete reset of the land. Right? Hold on. They would go in the thing, and God, remember, originally went to Israel and split up all the land by tribe and by family, and everybody had some land. Now, various things would happen, that people would lose their jobs, they'd loan, they'd do whatever, they'd actually lose their inheritance, they'd lose their land. But every 50 years, there was a massive debt canceled and a resetting of it. Now, there's no time we know if this ever happened in history, by the way. We don't know if this ever actually happened, but you're saying the point of the law, right, is we're understanding the internal principles underneath. That's going on. Another one? Okay. Oh, is that right? They have it. They use the Jubilee. Interesting. Yeah, it's funny. They actually found a lot of documents way, way back in China that there were very, very early people bringing the gospel and the scriptures out there. That's been so far back. It's amazing that you don't realize in a lot of these places it was there really, really far ago. Actually, something? You remember the verse that says, "Go into all the nations and proclaim the gospel," Matthew 28. They actually believed until the 17th or 18th century that was actually just about the first century. It was fulfilled in the first century. Therefore, it wasn't a command to the believer today. I mean, we accept it as a command to the believer today. Until William Carey, they didn't believe that. They thought the first church, these early apostles, took it all the way out to China, India, everywhere. It's interesting. Anyway, the idea, just go back one sec. The land, the reason for the reset of the land is that the land is mine. You're but aliens and tenants. You don't ever actually own the land. The land is God's, and God's given it to you. It's a gift. And this is, actually, I wasn't going to do that, but go for like three slides. We'll get back to that thing. One more. He says this in Deuteronomy 15, says, "There should be no poor among you, for in the land the Lord your God is giving you to possess as your inheritance, he'll richly bless you if you fully obey the Lord your God and are careful to follow all these commands I'm giving you today." It's important to understand that in God's economy, there should be no poor. God has given the land because everyone's supposed to enjoy it. Why does God give to everybody? Why did God create life? Everyone is to be blessed. They're to be satisfied. Everyone's to have food. They're to have everything. And he goes, in his little mini economy of Israel, right? It's kind of like he almost set apart in the fall a little people to do what's right. Here's my law. Here's the way to do it. If you would do it right and you'd follow me, you'd know the blessing. There'll be no poor. It would all do great. But what's the problem? It's broken. They sin. They don't do what's right, and as a result of that, there's inequity, there's people losing land, there's poor, there's needy all among you. It's a fall. It's the fall. It's brokenness. That's also why when Yeshua comes and he quotes, Isaiah, the Lord, the Spirit of the Lord is on me to preach good, he says to preach good news to the poor. Because the great redemption, when God's going to set things right, and that's this, Isaiah 61 is like a Jubilee language, again, it's like the reset of everything, is that he's coming to redeem the world, and that's good news for the poor. Because in a sense, the poor and the ones who are difficult and the hungry, they're the ones who are suffering the worst consequences of the fall. And so he says to the ones who are not suffering it, we'll talk about what he says. He's watching out for these ones who are the ones who are suffering the consequences of the horrors in the world. We're talking about, I know you weren't here earlier, but saying with all the poor and all the needy and the difficulty, how do we begin to think about it? That's kind of the question. So another law that they have with this is now walk back. This is another interesting law. This is a really there. This is a big law that actually mentions three times in the Torah. It's very big around Shavuot. They talk about this one a lot. It says when you're harvesting in your field and you overlook a sheaf, don't go back to get it. Leave it for the alien. And here's the crew that always shows up: the alien, the fatherless, and the widow. so the Lord God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beat the olives from your trees, don't go over the branches a second time. Leave what remains for the alien, the fatherless, and the widow. When you harvest grapes in your vineyard, do not go over the grapevines again. Leave what remains for the alien, the fatherless, and the widow. Again, these are this is like the impoverished poor that are among you. And it's interesting, the alien, by the way, the alien is the non-Israelite who's among you. You know, it's kind of the people out of the community. They don't even have the security of the community with them. They have nothing. The fatherless, the widow. Now, what's basically saying here is like, if you have the sheaf, you know, if you've harvested your whole field, it's almost like go over it messy. You know, we think about mass efficiency, get every one of those things. It says, you do it messy and don't even bother. Don't even worry that you've left a whole bunch of stuff and haven't done it efficiently. You leave it. And that's how these people who need it can come there and get food themselves. It's interesting, you know. One thing we won't see a lot of handouts. See, they still actually worked for it. They actually went there. You weren't like handing them food. They actually came back there, but you had a provision which allowed them to do it. It's kind of interesting. When I was in Taiwan, you know, the poor, the people who are really poor and needy there, they don't sit on the corner and ask for money. They sell gum or pencils or pens. And everybody knows it's that because they're doing that because they have no other way of, that's like almost like begging, but it doesn't degrade them and allows them to still remain honored. And people then buy their gum and buy their pencils and buy their pens. Obviously, you don't need the pencil or pen or anything like that, but it's your way of being able to do it. And I think this is kind of an interesting thing, too. So the people were able to still gather. They would do their own little harvest. And the same thing, the olive branches, you go over your olive things. Don't take all the olives down. You harvest it, you know, you'll give, but that's fine. You know, you go to, over your vine branches. Don't go get everything. You go over it, and the poor will come into your fields, and they'll be cared for. And interesting, in every 7 years, in fact, now I'll go to the next one. Every 7 years, it says, for 6 years you're to sow, sow your fields, harvest the crops. But during the seventh year, let the land lie unplowed, unused. Then the poor among your people may get food from it. And this is interesting, and the wild animals may eat what they leave. Do the same with your vineyard or olive grove. Every 7 years, you don't harvest it at all. You don't even work it. And it just provides for you. Interesting thing. I mean, so everyone could come in there and just have of it. And this is also, I think there's a picture of the Garden of Eden here too. Kind of the pre-broken world. Because how was it to be? You know, before, like, you know, God just provided the blessings for all. You know, the poor, everyone could walk through and just eat of the provisions of what God had. I think there's a bit of that kind of picture, you know, this of every 7 years. And there's a bit of the Sabbath is kind of the ultimate, you know, peace of God kind of thing. And so I think there's elements even the Sabbath year here, it's kind of the restoration. I don't know. You may not think that, you know, it's fine. You know, it's an interesting thought, though. Yeah, interesting. Okay. But it's just interesting. These are, like, here's another provision. Do not take advantage of a hired man who is poor and needy, whether he's a brother Israelite or an alien. Either one, if he's an Israelite or an alien, living in one of your towns, pay him his wages each day before sunset because he is poor and he's counting on it. Here's the great line. Otherwise, he may cry to the Lord against you. You'll be guilty of sin. That is that, yeah, you think you're in power here. You have that power right then. But he says, listen, man, yeah, he looks like he's powerless, but he can cry out. And the one in power will be watching and will set things right. You do what's right knowing that God is watching and God knows what's right. You may be the one who has the money and he doesn't. You remember God's eye is on that fatherless, the widow, the ones who have nothing to care for, the ones suffering these consequences of the poor. What's interesting, what you won't say, Mike, what you find interesting, I think, is that there's no causality as to what made them poor. It never seems to deal with that. They're responsible, they sinned, they did whatever. It seems like, listen, and I think what the idea is, he goes, listen, guys, you were enslaved in Egypt. This is kind of the logic he uses again. He goes, listen, don't you forget, you guys were powerless. You were enslaved in Egypt, and I reached down with my grace, and I redeemed you with a mighty hand and outstretched arm. You better be good to the other ones who were enslaved, who are aliens now, the sojourners, because that's all you were too. And this is the idea, man, it's all by grace you have anything anyway. You look at other people with grace. Don't look at them. Because if you don't, if you become the one who's like, and think about it practically, you become people's judges. What made you like this? When, you know, that's not our God's judge. It doesn't mean you don't have wisdom sometimes when you talk to people, but there's a central idea that you're not people's judges. God's judge. You've received grace. Show grace to others. At least that's why I think that's the overall thing. You know, it isn't obviously people take these thoughts so far. They go, that means this person who did all, you know, just it's in general. You're a recipient of grace. You're not to judge others or test why they all got their issues. Now, these are all sort of societal kind of questions. You know, societal kind of laws. There were provisions by which the poor could be gathered for. There were provisions for taking out debt, provisions for restoration of land, provisions for non-degrading of the poor societally. But what about personally? There's laws personally as well. And these are more larger principles as opposed to laws. And here's what it says, goes on in Deuteronomy 15. It says, if there's any poor among you in the land, your Lord... keep going. If there is a poor man among your brothers in any of the towns, and by the way, this is now closer. There's this principle of proximity as well of your responsibility. It's sort of like covenantal proximity. Your biggest responsibility is towards your direct family, and then towards your community, and then towards sort of the poor alien out there. And you had levels of responsibility, which you see in Torah, and I think you see that in New Testament as well. There it kind of says like the people in the church, in the world. So you still have responsibility to everybody. Like remember the Good Samaritan? He says, you know, basically the story of the Good Samaritan is this person's way out there. He's a Samaritan. He's hurt. Help that person way out there. Anybody is your brother. You say, who's your neighbor? Anyone in need. It's basically what Yeshua said in that thing. So there is an idea of the alien, anyone in need. But there is a proximity as well. But here it says, if there's any poor among your brothers in any of the towns, how are you supposed to be the Lord your God giving you? Do not be hard-hearted or tight-fisted towards your poor brother. Rather be open-handed and freely lend him whatever he needs. There's this idea of the heart and the hand, tight-fisted. Don't be tight-fisted towards your brother. And actually, the hand thing goes all the way through Deuteronomy 15. The canceling of debts, you know what it is? This is canceling of debts in the Hebrew. You know, opening it, releasing it. It's kind of like you have a hold of your brother when you have a debt, and you release it. You know, here he says, you're holding this stuff, your brother's in need. He goes, don't be tight-fisted. You'd just rather be open-handed towards your brother. And he says, and then he goes, and also don't be hard-hearted. It's really easy to be hard-hearted towards the poor, isn't it? To be resentful towards them and think they're this thing. He goes, don't have that harbor thought. Wicked, don't be hard-hearted, and don't harbor this thought, the thought Mike had. Don't harbor this wicked thought. The seventh year, the year for canceling debts is near, such you show ill will towards your poor needy brother and give him nothing. Good thinking. I'm glad the wicked thoughts just come. You know, that's it. But I think what he's saying, but you take comfort in this is because it is, why is the reason why there needs to be why something like this needs to be said? Because this is our natural thought. We have these thoughts. We don't. And he says, don't think like that. Just, he's in need. He's with you. Have a soft heart towards him. Keep an open hand towards him. Now, it's interesting, though. It says, and do what to him? Lend him. It's interesting. Now we always think, give. You know, lend to him, which is kind of an interesting thought. You know, there's provisions by which people can have things in society, but personally, it was a lending thing. Have you noticed the big thing, by the way, what the most successful program in the last probably 20 years in dealing with poverty in the world is? Do you guys know about micro-lending? It's one of the most successful programs. Rather than just giving to all these, like, you know, people are impoverished in these countries, they used to just give them stuff, people that they just spend and they remained in poverty. And they found by actually giving little loans, people could then begin their businesses, they can get started, and then they get themselves out of poverty. That actually giving has been a really bad idea. And lending's been incredibly successful. And basically, you see, it's funny. There you are back in the Torah saying, here's a provision for microloans, which a provision that if the guy does blow it away, and we could still get out of debt, that you're not stuck forever. You make your microloan, it doesn't work, you've blown it, you're eventually released. Release doesn't happen every 2 months, every 4 months, or every single loan, 7 years. So there's a time you remain in debt. You know, so it's not like you're quickly out of it. You know, you wouldn't just do it thinking 7 years is coming. Anyway, it's an interesting thought, the open hand, an open heart. And then again, it goes on to say, freely lend him. Keep going. Yeah, wicked thought, hard-hearted. One more. Yeah. And then the verse goes on, what the man might do if you are hard-hearted and tight-fisted. Once again, he may then appeal to the Lord against you. and you'll be found guilty of sin. God's watching this stuff. You have it. He doesn't. Keep a soft heart. Keep it open-handed. And give generously to him, and do so without a grudging heart. Then because of this, the Lord your God will bless you in all your work, and watch this, and everything you put your hand to. You know, you put your hand to that work, and it's as if God's just filling that thing up. You just keep you keep open-hearted, keep warm-hearted towards those in need, keep open-handed, lend freely, give. God will bless it. He goes, listen, there will always be poor in the land. Therefore, I command you, be open-handed towards your brothers and towards the poor and needy in your land. It's an amazing principle. You know, and I think it's just, you know, how does it all apply? A principle of keeping a soft heart. You know, watch the hard heart, watch all the kind of judgmental attitudes, and an open, generous hand. God blesses. That's, you know, these people are suffering consequences of how it's not supposed to be. You know, some have, some don't. This is a lot of advice to the rich. Now, there's an interesting, does anyone know where Jesus quotes Deuteronomy 15, what we just read? It's kind of a weird place, and it's actually going to be a little bit counterintuitive to what we're talking about today. He quotes this, but he does something very different with it. Go on. Let's see if she gets it. When Judas talks about it? Bingo. All right. Yay. Dana, what did he say? Poor will be with you always, but you won't always have me. Right. Interesting, huh? So there's the sense of, you know, that, you know, because I think a lot of times it's an interesting thing to our, because Judas essentially was in his heart, he was kind of like saying, well, that, you know, you've broken that perfume over, that's enough for a whole year. What are you doing giving it to her? You know, we give it to the poor. It's funny how people kind of lose that, you know, they kind of take the thing of giving and they've actually made a justification for their own wicked heart. And it's kind of interesting today, you know, I think there's a lot of people doing tremendous work towards caring for those in poor, needy, and things like that. But a lot of times their hearts are not right before God. And they're almost like some strange justification. You know, there's an idea that it comes underneath our worship of God. We give because we believe he watches. He knows it. He orders our life. It's how we understand what we're given and how we're given. When you lose that compass, it's kind of a dangerous animal. But I think keeping our hearts right before God, knowing that he's first, knowing he's the one who gives, knowing that, you know, in God's world, we're not supposed to have, there's not supposed to be these poor. If everyone would follow him, it's supposed to, you know, everyone's supposed to enjoy what God has provided for everybody. He's like, that all this stuff has, God wants everyone to be provided for. That's why this world's here. That's why we're placed in it. You know, God desires to bless all. But, you know, because of the fall, there's lots of disease, there's lots of brokenness, there's lots of poor people. God's advice to us, you know, is keep a soft heart. Keep a generous heart. Keep an open hand. Now, you might say, and I'll just close with one other story, because when people go, what can I do? It's just so big. It's just so overwhelming. There's just so much. Where can you start? What can you do? I can't. Do I give to everyone? And, you know, it's interesting. We think to give to all these people and do everything. You know, it is an interesting principle here that the person made the harvest and there were all these poor in the land. He actually didn't turn around and just distribute his entire harvest to everybody, did he? No, he took his harvest, and what did he probably do with it? He probably took his harvest. He probably took a tithe out, gave it to God. It was, you know, God's midst, you know, which was to the service of the thing. He probably took took the next big chunk. He cared for his immediate family. Took the rest and made sure the community around him was there. But yet there was a provision by which he cared for others, and he maintained an open hand towards those who were in need around him. And it's kind of a thing. Sometimes we think of this extreme, but there was a way we can have that. Now, you still might say, well, it's still overwhelming, though, the level of need. What can I do? You know, and I'll close with this. There's this. I think it's a rabbinical story of this, you know, huge, huge storm in the ocean, and it washed ashore like thousands upon thousands of starfish, and they're lining up and down the beach. I don't know if you know this story. It's a good one. It's just, you know, and they're all just in the sun, and they're all just going to die. And a man just looks at them all and just realizes this beach covered with starfish, they're all dying, and he kind of begins to cry, just the sadness of seeing them all dying. And he sees one man way, way down the beach, reaching down and standing up. And he gets closer, and he sees the guys picking up one starfish and throwing it into the water. And he reaches down, picks up another one, and throws in the water. And the guy says, what are you doing? He goes, you can make no difference. Look at this. Look how many, you know. And the guy looks at him. He goes, what difference can you make? And the guy picks up a starfish, looks at him and he throws it in the water and says, made a big difference for that one. And I think there's a, you know, don't ever think you can't make a difference. We all can make a big difference in someone's life. You know, see the starfish in front of you and keep a soft heart and an open hand. Let's pray. Oh, Lord, thank you for your word, Lord, and even just the way it seems to, I know, Lord, just hits my heart, Lord. Oh, it's so easy to get hard-hearted, especially as we, so many of us are ones that have, towards the have-nots, when it seems like there's just so many of them, Lord. Lord, help us to understand your heart in this world, that we might see things as you see them, that we might understand what is good and right and pleasing in your sight, and live right lives before you. We praise you, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.